I am going to introduce the speakers down here. You have no mother than me.
Dashing. Dashing.
Jim Powers, and I'm very excited about here in Missouri.
Dashing. Dashing. I like that. It's been a long time for that. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Jim Powers. And my sobriety date is February 18, 2002. Central's my home group, and like Brian said last week, it's the greatest home group there is. And if you're having problems with your home group, fix it. You know, you can come to ours, but fix yours, because home groups are a very important thing that saved my life. And it was because God works through the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. He speaks through them to me today. And I'm going to briefly tell you what it was like, because I told some of my friends I can't even get into a good armed robbery in 20 minutes. And that's where alcohol took me. You know, my first drink was when I was 11 years old, and I did not come from an alcoholic family. My family was an Air Force family. My dad was a commander. My mom was the base lady. And so they didn't drink. And I have three older sisters, had three older sisters, an older brother, and I used to have a younger brother. But when I was 11, my oldest sister got married, and they allowed everybody in the family to have a little champagne at the reception. And they said, you can have a sip of champagne. And I just threw mine back, and something happened. Bill Oakley used to talk about the golden moment. You know, and I don't know anything about the golden moment. All my disease said is more. I want more. And that day I went back around that champagne fountain and got five more, and I found out what I was really missing up to 11 years old. I was missing what I wanted, more. We moved down here in 86. I was 13 years old. And to get more, my illness has always called for more. I became a burglar, and I spent a lot of time in the juvenile home up in Orange County. I didn't go to school very often. I just didn't have time for school because I was too much wanting to get drunk all the time. Drugs are a big part of my story, but I really respect the traditions, and I really respect Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'm going to bypass most of them because alcohol was there when I started, and alcohol was there when I finished. I got caught a lot doing these burglaries, like I said, and so I was going to jail a lot, going to juvenile home, and it didn't matter. You know, that was a problem with me, is I didn't care about the consequences because I knew when I got out, I could get my alcohol again. I progressed. It became armed burglaries. It became armed robbery. I started carrying a gun when I was 16. 17, I got arrested, and my dad bailed me out one last time, and he shouldn't have done it. We know that today, but, you know, I begged him, and I pleaded the alcoholic plea. You know, Dad, I'll never do it again. I'll never do that again. And the whole time I was in jail waiting for him to bail me out, I was thinking about how can I do it again, you know. But when I was in jail, I meant it. I really didn't feel like I was ever going to do that again. And the night he bailed me out, I took off. I stole the .45 automatic he had in his gun case. I went across the country all the way to California and then to Minnesota on a run. And I came back to Orlando and was promptly arrested. And I was 18 years old. And it was funny because when I was here last week with Brian, I could hear the dogs outside barking. And I love those dogs. I love those hounds. Because those hounds remind me of 40 years ago, I was sentenced to 52 years in the state penitentiary in Rayford, Florida. And I was 18 years old. And I had hepatitis at the time, so I was in an isolation cell, and the only book in that isolation cell was a Bible. And I'd never gone to church. I mean, you know, the family might have gone to church on Easter or Christmas, but we weren't into religion or anything. But I was in so much fear of going to Rayford that all I did was just grab that Bible and pray. And I prayed for 2 weeks. And it seems like nonstop now, but that was the first time. When I got sober, that was the first time I can look back in my life and say that God was doing for me back then. Because 2 weeks later, a judge called me back in and he said, instead of going to prison up in Rayford, I'm going to sentence you to 18 months in an Orange County chain gang. And we used to have a chain gang in Orange County 40 years ago. They had just taken the chains off the legs, but they still had armed guards at each side. And if you ever seen the movie Cool Hand Luke, that's exactly what it was like. Sun up to sundown, 6 days a week. And it was the most miserable time, and those dogs lived right outside my window, you know, and I heard them howling every day, all day that I was around there. I served real short time on the chain gang, became a trustee, got into the kitchen, and I had one thought when I got in the kitchen. You know, when you're feeding 150 people three meals a day, there's something in the kitchen that you can put together in a can, put it up on a shelf, and strain it through a sock, and you can get hammered. And I made buck, and all I was thinking about is alcohol. I got out of jail, went and did my probation real good. I just did not want to go back to jail. It wasn't like I stopped doing anything. It just, I didn't get caught for a long time. And I only went to prison one more time after that. And then I kind of got my life together. You know, I met this girl in a drunken haze, and we got married. We dated like alcoholics. We took some drugs, drank a lot of alcohol, and we went to bed. You know, I never dated anybody in my life until I got sober. You know, and that's a strange thing to do, is actually go to the movies and not think you're going to go home and do something. I got married, and we moved back to Florida. I drank every day. I drank every day from the time I got up. You know, I didn't drink when I was in real estate, and after I got married and I got into real estate career, I didn't drink in the morning. I didn't drink in the afternoons, and so I didn't think ever that I had a problem with alcohol. But every time I started drinking, I drank to blackout. I mean, I was a blackout drinker every night. She stayed with me for 21 years. I mean, that you know, God bless her, because I wouldn't have stayed with me for 21 days. But she did, and I had a good career. You know, I made a lot of money. And had a nice house on the lake with a guest house and two cars, and she didn't have to work, and I got up every day and went to work. I didn't have the shakes. I didn't hide bottles. I knew where my bottles were. I didn't have to hide them. I didn't drink normally, and I kind of knew that because I drank Schlitz malt liquors, and none of my friends drank Schlitz malt liquor. I didn't buy Crown Royal, but if you had Crown Royal, I'd be glad to drink it. You know, you came to my house, I had Schlitz malt liquor and LTD whiskey. And, you know, because I drink for effect. And that's what the doctor's opinion told me when I got here, is I drink for the effect produced by alcohol, not for taste. Like I said, I had a great career. We had a little boy in 1994. A lot of people up at Central know him because when he was 5 years old, I gave him away. I gave him away for another man to raise him out in Mississippi, because I stayed in the bottle when she said enough. You know, I'm going to leave you if you don't quit drinking. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because a friend of mine committed suicide, and my life was just going downhill at the time. And I came to one meeting. I was only going to come to one meeting and tell the alcoholics in that room that if you didn't stop drinking, you were going to kill yourself. Now, you don't think that's funny, but it really is sick when I walk in a room and I blurt out in tears that if you don't quit drinking, you're going to kill yourself, and there's a guy with 32 years sober at the table. And they just said, well, you know, it'll be okay. Why don't you come back tomorrow and try not to drink today? And I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. For 27 days, I couldn't do it. An old man named Leo on the 27th day said to me, why don't you just drink some arsenic tonight and get it over with? I'm tired of seeing you kill yourself slowly. And he'd done that to a lot of people. I didn't know that. That was, he found that right time to just pick at somebody. And that was the first time in almost 37 years that I went home and I didn't drink and I didn't take any drugs. And, you know, I say I started my road to recovery on a resentment. And if you know anything about resentments, you won't stay sober if you start on a resentment. And I didn't. I came in and out of Central for 3.5 years. I'd get 60 days, 90 days. People would say, get a sponsor, work the steps. And I'd say, I got a sponsor, and I'm on step 4. You know, well, how's that going? It's real tough. It's real tough. I didn't have a sponsor. I wasn't working. You know, the ism in alcoholism stands for I sponsored myself. And you don't stay sober if a sick man's sponsoring a sick man. So I continued to get drunk. I put 9 months of continuous sobriety together. I was praying. I was asking God to remove the obsession. I was not doing anything. I was reading the book, and it was a very interesting book, but I wasn't doing anything that it said in there. I saw myself in there quite a bit. And I came to a speaker meeting, and I had picked up a 9-month chip that night. And somebody directed me to the speaker who had sat there and told my story. And I was kind of trapped, and here's how God works. I'd reached out my hand, and I said, well, I guess I need a sponsor. And he said, well, are you done drinking? And I said, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm done drinking. And I took out my business card, and on the back side I wrote down my phone number, and I handed it to him, and I said, "Why don't you call me Monday if you want to sponsor me?" I know, you know, I'm still kind of sick, I think. He took out his business card, and on the back side he wrote down his phone number. He said, "Call me Monday if you want me to sponsor you." The guy's name is Joe S. We turned those two business cards over, and we worked for the same real estate company in two different cities. Never met the man before. And I just thought, wow, you know, I was still under the impression there was coincidence and luck and things like that. I don't believe that anymore. And the next day I picked up a half gallon of whiskey because I was going to have one drink. And when I came to on Monday morning on my kitchen floor, I was covered in vomit, pee, and blood, and I didn't know what I had done. I didn't know who I had hurt. And I picked up the phone and I called that guy, and he never answers his phone. And that day he answered his phone. I told him what I did, and he said, "Well, pour out your whiskey, you know, go down and pick up a white chip at your central group, and I'll meet you there, and we'll start working the steps." And that's exactly what we did. And I started having spiritual awakenings left and right. Spiritual experiences are something I see every day now in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're amazing because sometimes they're just a flash. Those little miracles that you see, and I used to say, "Oh, wow, good luck, you know, coincidence." I don't believe in coincidence. I know God's in my life today because when I did the third step, I was adamant. I needed somebody to run my life. I was powerless over alcohol, and I'm powerless over everything else in my life. My life became so unmanageable that alcohol was not my problem. I found out in the big book that my brain's my problem. Jim's my problem. Alcohol was just a symptom. And what I did was I did exactly what I was told. You know, I did the action that Ryan talks about all the time. I took the action that the book talks about. You know, I read it page by page. I studied it. I highlighted it. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, it's a God-given program, in my opinion. And I don't go to church today. I was talking to a friend of mine. I might go Sunday because he found a kind of a neat church he likes, and I might go try it. But I can tell you, my central group is my church. It's where I see spiritual awakenings happen every day. It's where God does for us what we can't do for ourselves. He did for me. He took away the obsession to drink. And he gave me all my dreams. Bill Oakley used to say, "Bring your dreams. Bring your drunk dreams to AA." I love that old man. I mean, he was a great guy. And I brought my dreams to AA. I mean, sometimes I thought I was challenging God with my dreams. "I bet you can't do this." Yeah, he can. He can do anything. You know? Today, I love the service. I mean, to me, there's nothing greater than answering the phone or doing a 12-step call or anything. You know, I took some money here, some of the last money I had from all my my worldly deeds, and I became a truck driver. I decided I didn't want to be in real estate anymore, and this year I went to school down in Winter Haven and became an over-the-road truck driver because I thought that's what I wanted to do. And I started doing that. I started driving across America. Unfortunately, what every trucking company wants you to do is drive and not stop. And so they team you up. And we stopped four times in the first 21 days. And I've got a guy in here that I worked with. And every time we'd stop, I'd text him and say, "We're spending the night in Youngstown, Ohio." And within 5 minutes, I had the hotline for Youngstown, Ohio. I called somebody and say, "Hey, I'm stuck at a truck stop. I'm an alcoholic from Orlando. Somebody came and picked me up. Sparks, Nevada. Sacramento, California, Cheyenne, Wyoming." Four times I stopped, four times at an AA meeting. And that's service right there. People pick up the phone and say, "Hey, yeah, I'll come pick you up." I mean, that's some of the greatest feelings that I had. One of the worst feelings I had was I developed kidney stones on that long-distance trucking. And I didn't develop one or two, I developed six. And now I didn't get to go to the hospital. I mean, you're driving down the highway, you're passing kidney stones and a milk jug in the back of a truck. I'm telling you, it's not much fun. And at the end of May, I decided I had to stop doing that. And since I've been sober, I've ran away from Central four times. I moved to Georgia, and I've moved away four different times. And four different times, God's brought me back to Orlando for a reason. I don't know the reason. You know, in the first step, when I say my life's unmanageable, I mean it's unmanageable by me. And those questions like why and how, those are management questions. You know, I don't know why. I don't know how these things happen. And it's not none of my business. I'm here for one reason only. What I'm doing tonight, you know, I'm trying to carry the message that Alcoholics Anonymous works. The spiritual program that Bill and Bob put together, you know, and took to Bill Dobson, the man on the bed. You know, Bob was only sober 7 days when they went to visit that guy on the bed, and he was carrying the message. You know, and people say, take your time, you know, work the steps slowly. I don't believe in that crap. I'm pretty adamant about it. You know, if somebody's serious and they pass the qualification test, it's not a hard test to pass. You know, do you drink when you don't want to drink? Yep, you might have a problem. You know, do you do things you don't remember doing? Yep. You know, let's open the book and see what the book says. Because this book has never been changed in 77 years, and there's a reason for that. The reason is because it works. You know, a lot of people want to change it, you know, but right now I think there's over 312-step programs that fed off Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're great. I mean, you know, they're great for everything. There's a lip balm 12-step program I hear now, and I've never been addicted to lip balm, but I guess, if you are, just substitute alcohol for lip balm and work the program, and it'll work, you know. All you got to do, in my humble opinion, all you got to do is give up the fight. You know, for 3.5 years, my ego kept telling me, I'm not like these other people. I didn't shake. I didn't go to detox. I didn't go to the emergency room. I've never been to a rehab except to speak, you know. And the whole thing was, so what? Did you drink when you didn't want to drink? Yeah. Did you do things you didn't want to do when you were drunk? Absolutely. Do you remember everything you did? No. People had to tell me what I did, and I couldn't believe it. You know, being a blackout drunk, I'm really glad I didn't kill anybody, you know, because I could have. And I know today that God's in my life. You know, I'm going through something at 10.5 years sober. I never thought would happen. I'm bankrupt. I mean, I am financially bankrupt, but I'm not spiritually bankrupt, and that's what I was when I came in. Everybody's got me. You know, my whole group is supporting me. Not financially, but I mean they're supporting me, you know, emotionally and spiritually, and they know the same thing I know. As long as I keep getting up, as long as I don't pull the sheet over my head and say, I don't want to face today, you know. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I go, God, okay, I'll get up, I'll get dressed, I'll go out and I'll look for a job, you know. And it's going to be a great job. Whenever God wants me to do something, He'll find it for me. You know, I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to sweat about it. And I definitely don't have to drink over it. Good Lord, you know, what's drinking going to do? Nothing. It'll kill me. You know, the book's got all kinds of promises in it. And, you know, a lot of people say there are threats in it. For me to drink is to die. It says it in the book. Well, that's not a threat to me. That's a promise. You know, there's a lot of great promises in there. But there's a lot of, you know, promises that tell me what's going to happen if I start drinking again. And 4 years ago, I got a call when I was up in Georgia, and my little brother was 10 years younger than me. And he didn't want a spiritual way of life. He wanted to take it to the bitter end, and I held his hand when he took his last breath. And he died from alcoholism. And that's pretty hard to watch. I mean, it's the most horrible thing in the world. And I'm going to end on this. In the book, somewhere, because I don't quote pages, it asked me a question. And I personalize the steps. I personalize the book. You know, when it says we admitted, I cross out the we and I put I admitted. You know, I have to personalize this program into my life. And it says in there, you know, either God is everything or God is nothing. You know, what is your choice? You know, and I made my choice. You know, God either is or He isn't. What's your choice to be? Thanks for letting me share.